evening, everyone, and welcome to the Edge Portal. Tonight, Larry Taylor, our favorite host, is going to be interviewing Richard Shaw about anomalies and UFOs and all things like that. Larry, you want to take it? I'm assuming the 818 area code is Richard Shaw.
Oh, okay.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Yeah, hey, how you doing, Richard? Glad to have you on tonight with me.
Glad to be here, Larry. Thank you, Dorothy.
You're welcome. I'm going to mute my mic. You guys go right ahead.
Okay, thanks so much, Dorothy. Richard, glad you could be on tonight, and really I've been looking forward to this for some time because, you know, you and I share a lot of data back and forth sometimes, and you know, kind of pique, I guess, the other one's, I guess you could say, curiosity at things that we're running across out here in the anomaly world. But we never do get to really just sit and talk and share. And tonight I really just basically want to kind of give you the run, you know, kind of take this show where you want to. You know, you're involved in so many things. I mean, just an incredible amount of things, you know, all the way from Torah codes to anomalies, UFOs. One thing I did want you to talk about later when you get time is a little bit of research you did with the sun and a cube that was supposedly photographed in the sun or with the sun. And, you know, kind of take it where you want to. As a matter of fact, if you want to, you know, drop in an ad for Watcher 7, that's perfectly fine with me. We'll just go where we go, okay?
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate that. I just sent you a note. We just got the Watcher 7 trailer uploaded just about 5 minutes ago.
Okay.
So it's up there on my YouTube site. And the only reason I mention it, I'm not trying to plug it as much as I'd like people to see what it is we're talking about. And that's the best way I know to do it. So if you go to YouTube.com, I think it's /pinlight. It's the first video. It says Watcher 7 trailer. But you don't have to do that now. But after we talk, there'll probably be some things that you'll want to see.
Great. I did, Richard, watch a little bit of some work you were doing with Watcher 7. And, I didn't release any of that, but wow, I mean, you know, there's hardly words to describe the long list of incredible, I guess you could say, secrets or hidden things that we just don't claim to see every day that really is out there. I mean, you guys have really dug up some incredible, not only artifacts, I mean, all the way from artifacts to sky objects to cosmic, I mean, it's incredible what, you know, really packed into what's coming out. And I tell everybody, I mean, you know, I've got all of the Watchers, including Watcher 6, but I've been waiting, really, really waiting for Watcher 7. They're an incredible amount of shows. And I'll tell you what, Richard, one people that I love to sit and just listen to talk is Roger Lear. He just piques my curiosity so much on what he delves into.
Oh, he's amazing. I don't know. We call him Uncle Roger. We know him so well. And he was over at my house this weekend. And as usual, we talk. Roger is an amazing resource. He's truly one of the most amazing people I've ever met. He knows everybody involved at a high level in the UFO phenomenon. There's not a single person that's involved in it that he doesn't know and know really well and worked with. And he's been a huge advocate of the work we're doing with Watchers. In fact, he stood up at a recent CIRO meeting at the Close Encounters Research Org and held a box of Watchers up there and said, "This is the best documentary series of its type on the subject."
Wow.
So that was a great endorsement from Dr. Lear. But And then he then he bragged a little bit, said, and I'm in every one of them. And I said, yes, he is.
Oh, he really is. I mean, I look forward to every one to see what type of additional studies, you know, Roger. One of the things that Roger does is, you know, when you guys have interviewed him, is he has this intricate look into, I guess you could say an in-depth almost, look into the enigma of the, what do you call them, the things you're digging out of people, implants?
Implants, right.
Yeah, because I have never, I mean, seriously, and I do listen a lot, I have never heard anyone describe these type of implants, and I mean, he describes them from dealing with them, drilling on them, laser stuff and everything, looking into them, and even watching them move or try to,
yeah,
to come back together. I mean, it's incredible. It's hard to wrap your mind around the things he even just talks about.
Well, he's been doing this a very long time. In fact, he's done now, he's up to 17 implant removal surgeries.
Mm.
And so this has been over a, I don't know, probably a 25-year period of time where he's done this. And if you go back and look at some of the TV shows he was on in the 90s that was interested in implants, and you look at what he was pulling out of people, what's coming out of people today is far more sophisticated. So these things have been changing over the past 20 years, and according to Dr. David Jacobs, he believes that they're done now, and that the breeding program has concluded, and they're going to be basically introducing hybrids into our society, and have already started doing that.
Yeah. Mm. Boy, and that's another
it's crazy.
You know. Yeah, that's. Have you come up with any more data? I know you guys started a little bit of delving into something called the black-eyed children. Have you come up with a little more data on that?
Yeah, well, I know that L.A. has talked again David, that is the author of the Black-Eyed Children book. And, there's been more sightings of them, and it's not going away. There's still sightings of black-eyed children in various places around the world at this point. It's quite disturbing. I mean, we have theories about it, but we're not sure what they are. We think that they might be some sort of a failed hybrid attempt, that they actually look like children, but they're probably much older than children. But they do frighten people, and it's not a good thing. It's not like these are friendly kids, and even big German Shepherd dogs go running to hide under the bed if one knocks on the front door.
Wow.
It's strange.
It is.
But
you know, I'm
just going to say, in Watcher 7, we really, some of the pieces of the puzzle started to actually come together, and I got so excited about that I'm more excited about Watcher 7 than I was over Watcher 6, which was really quite an exploratory thing for us. By going to Peru and coming up, finding our own elongated skulls, you know, crawling around and getting one out of a cave, and the research that we did there. And there's some stuff that isn't in 7 that I can tell you that we discovered, and things that we wanted to test that we brought back to the lab and did lab tests on from Peru. And we also did lab tests on a sphere that fell to Earth in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
There's just so much to talk about. I mean, where do you want to start?
Oh, man. It's incredible. You guys in your trip to Peru, you know, I'm pretty sure you probably did a lot of the filming, because you wasn't in the film itself. But the filming there with Watcher 6 was just, it was great. I mean, it really was.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Yeah, I had a camera on around my neck almost the entire trip, and it was amazing, the stuff that we saw there. But Larry, I really think that the UFO phenomena, the strange skeleton hybrids that we found in Peru, the megalithic structures around the world, and the abduction scenario. All these things are connected. They're not isolated. It's a phenomenon that we're seeing. We live in an incredible time of human history to be able to see these things actually unfold before our eyes. And there's all kinds of clues in scripture about what's happening. And I'm just, I don't know, after Watcher 7, I still have another 25 to 30 minutes of editing to add to it. I'm almost up to an hour, and I want the show to be longer, and I've got lots more material. So I want to stretch it out as far as I can before we release it. But we're planning on releasing Watcher 7 next month. That would be November. But in all of these processes, I mean, people, I think, are becoming a lot more open-minded about UFOs in general. In fact, Chris Putnam, who co-wrote the book Exo Vaticana with Tom Horn, was one of the guys that we interviewed in the show, and he got a hold of a poll that was taken in the UK that said that more people believe in ET than believe in God.
Wow. I have heard that.
Yeah. This all started back in the late 40s with Kenneth Arnold, who was a pilot that was out looking for, he was hoping a search party, looking for a downed aircraft. And while he was doing that, he saw a bunch of silver discs a couple miles from his plane and could see them lit up in the sun, and said they skipped along like saucers on a lake. And the press misquoted him and said that Kenneth Arnold saw flying saucers. And that's how the whole term started.
Mm.
And
well, it just went on since there. I mean, you know, I guess, you know, of course, everybody still claims that term. That term really stuck. I mean, even in media, of course, you had the Roswell, you know, saucer craft, and then a weather balloon or whatever, and then you know, that term is still out there today. I mean, if you see something and you call it a UFO, the explanation seems to be for a UFO is you've just identified a flying saucer. And in all reality, and you know, I've sent you some photographs of stuff I've taken in the sky up here over Oklahoma.
Amazing.
And a lot of it is not flying saucers. There are other flying type things.
Right. Some of them belie description. I mean, we've got stuff. This woman named Linda shot a picture up here in Los Angeles, and it just looked like some kind of tubular structure, multicolored with lights attached in various places, hovering over the Los Angeles landscape. Some of these aerial phenomena are cloaked in the infrared spectrum. You can't see them unless you're using infrared photography. It's really funny, but they are there. They're just invisible to the naked eye, but if you use infrared, you can see there's something, a glowing object hanging in the sky and staying there. I mean, we've had major people that say they've seen UFOs. Jimmy Carter was known for seeing a UFO. Dennis Kucinich saw a UFO. Bill Clinton even believed there was a UFO at Roswell. He went through and asked to read all the documents about it in 1998, was convinced it really happened. Astronaut Gordon Cooper had a saucer land on a dry lake bed at the base where he was at, and they took 16-millimeter film of it, and before he could barely look at it, the authorities took it away and deemed it classified, and no one's seen it since. Astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who was one of the Apollo astronauts in Greece, we've been visited. I don't know what all Edgar Mitchell has seen, but he's very outspoken about it. Ronald Reagan made a famous speech at the UN about what if we were being visited by visitors from outside this world. And then we've got the media, who if anybody sees anything, especially if they're running for office, they're deemed to be crazy and are ridiculed. Instead of looking at it as a scientific phenomenon, which is that's what it is. It isn't crazy. It's because thousands of people have seen it. And the latest thing that I don't know whether I put it in our notes to you or not, maybe I did, but I just discovered that over since April, there's been an average of 900 to 1,000 reported UFO sightings a month.
Wow.
And that's up like several percent. I mean, that's like more than we've ever had. And it's from these people that write in and describe it very clearly what they saw. And it's from around the world.
Man, this is what's interesting. You know, you and I have talked, and you, even when filming for Watchers, actually filmed a UFO during the filming.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't plan it that way, but it occurred.
That's right. That's true. I was taking some B-roll out to, I don't know where, if you know where this is, but if you've ever watched the movie Iron Man, I think it's in the second Iron Man movie, he has this convertible Audi, and he's driving down Pacific Coast Highway by this big rock, and that's Point Magoo.
Oh,
okay. So I went down at the same place one day, and I had a camera stuck to the hood of my car, and was just getting some beautiful landscape footage to put into Watchers. And when I got home and put it up, there was a white spot in the sky over my car. And I didn't see that when I was filming it. And every time I was basically headed in the direction of Santa Monica from Malibu, this spot appeared on the digital film. It didn't matter if the camera was mounted on a fender, anything that was up in that showed the sky, I could see this white spot. So then I went home and did a test. I wonder if this is infrared, like I've been reading about and seeing on Jaime Masson's videos that he's been putting out. So I took my Sony remote that I used to turn my monitor on here in the studio, and I aimed it at the little camera. I have a GoPro Hero HD camera, and basically hit the power on button on the remote into the lens of the Hero cam, and it lit up bright blue. Now, if you look at it with your eye, you don't see anything.
Hmm.
So I talked with Stephen Colburn about it, and I said, I think my camera's picked up an infrared signature. And he said, yeah, there's like a certain frequency of infrared light that these remotes put out, and apparently the camera can see that. And perhaps this UFO is at that same frequency of light, which it must have been, because it was definitely in the shot in various places, and it was not a lens flare. So
huh.
I just thought that was kind of interesting.
You know, what I found kind of interesting, because I am a camera nut, and I don't have a lot of expensive equipment, but I'm in a place where there's really not any light pollution particularly at all. You know, you've seen some of the photos I've taken here, no light pollution anywhere around. And
amazing.
Different. This is what's odd to me is different cameras will pick up objects that the other ones won't. I mean, there's a difference even between the cameras, and some of these are digital. You know.
Well, they don't all have the same CCD characteristics. Like, if I try to shoot an infrared object with my Canon 60D, it looks dark red. You can barely see that anything's there. Whereas if I shoot the same thing with my GoPro Hero 2 or Hero 3 cameras that I have, it lights up bright blue, same object. So the Canons from the factory have an infrared filter that's permanently mounted over the chip.
Oh.
And you can have that permanently removed, but then once you do that, the camera is permanently for shooting infrared and nothing else. So I thought about actually converting the 60D into infrared camera and buying another body, Canon body, so I can use all the lenses I have for regular shooting. But I just haven't done that yet, but that's something I'm considering doing.
Have you, let me ask you a question too. I know you used the, I can't remember now, Watchers 2 or 3 or somewhere along in that, maybe 3, you guys talked about the movement or the changes in the moon, and you used something called, I think you said red eye camera or something like that.
Oh, it's
to
a,
actually
it's
film,
a red cam.
Red cam. To film that.
Yeah.
And Have you got any more? I know you guys really haven't brought it up lately, but is there any more movement or information coming in about the moon and the way it sets in the sky?
Well, not so much the positioning of the moon, but more or less the what's on the surface of the moon in places that we're not allowed to see. And I have a friend, Jose Escamilla, that's done a lot of investigative work on the surface of the moon, and he's pulled down hundreds of shots of the moon's surface from NASA and also from Japan. Both Japan and China have set up satellites to shoot 1.6 million pictures of the moon. Mm. And some of that is available on the JAXA website, J-A-X-A. And you can actually look at moving video of the satellite streaming over the surface of the moon. Mm. And there are certain things as it's passing over there where you have, it looks like objects, buildings, parallel lines that don't look like they were naturally created, 90-degree angles on things. And then on the other side of the moon, in some of the NASA shots, some of these NASA pictures are highly overexposed, and when you put them into Photoshop and you correct the exposure, all sorts of things, interesting things, come out. And one of those things is looks like a crashed spaceship. That's an enormous structure of something that looks like it's broken in half on part of the side of the moon. And we're going to show those. So Dave's going to show them to us in Watcher 7.
Oh, my.
I do think that there's stuff going on in the moon. There's like craters that apparently are illuminated at night. You can see light coming out of them. Like there are little tiny cities in there. There's stuff going on up there that we're not being told about. And what I think is interesting, Senator Gravel, who was in, who will be in Watcher 7, is talking about that we have a military space force already that is in existence. And we don't know how long it's been in existence or what technology we have, but he admitted that we have one. That's a huge admission.
Oh, that's unbelievable. I mean, that's rumor stuff over the last few years, but apparently now you have conclusive evidence of some kind that this does exist, that there is a space fleet, a spaceport. You know,
right.
We've had for some time, I believe it was Edgar Mitchell, if I remember right, indicated that some people actually you know, were brought into what they called a space. Started as the Air Force, in the Air Force, but it became a space fleet or a space agency type thing, a secret project.
Right. Well, we think that we've got technology that is so far beyond the shuttle that it's just almost kind of silly, and we've had it for decades. But the public doesn't know about it, and we have no way to verify it or prove it. But it seems that we have a lot of technology that's buried that we're not allowed to see, and this is going on in black ops projects and levitation technologies and special kind of energy and all sorts of stuff is happening that. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we're doing some major work. And also, you know, that we made a deal back in the early 50s. Eisenhower apparently made a deal to share some of our population with the incoming ETs, and they would share technology for us. And I believe that's what's been going on, and I think that's why the United States is so tight-lipped on revealing anything about the aliens or alien technologies, because it would diminish our control over that information worldwide.
Hmm. I had heard that. Matter of fact, you know, you recently sent, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but you recently sent me a photograph of a crashed alien body, among other bodies, that I believe it was Mexico, wasn't it, where it crashed and these bodies were burned a little?
Oh, that was actually in Brazil in 1996.
Brazil.
They call it the Brazil Roswell. And apparently, a fairly large craft crashed. Here's all that I know about it. This vessel from space crashed, and there were eight beings, occupants, in this spacecraft. One of them was killed and burned, which is with the picture I sent you. Another one was seriously injured. Six others disappeared into the forest and have never been found. Now, these creatures were seen by over 100 eyewitnesses. And they supposedly had dark skin and had red glowing eyes. And the ones that were burnt, what was interesting was that the newspaper article that came out called them stinky aliens, that they smell really bad. And I thought, you know, all of this stuff is picked up and used in movies, these aspects about smelling aliens. It was, you know, if you've ever seen the movie Independence Day, there's a scene where, you know, they're talking about how badly they smell. But the ones in Brazil, one of the officers that saw the injured one picked up this alien and carried it on his lap in the truck to the hospital.
Mm.
And they laid it on a gurney, and all of the people there didn't know what to say. What is this that you brought us? And they tried to nurse him back to health, but he died of his injuries. But the guy, the officer that brought him in, 2 weeks later died of a strange disease, almost like Ebola.
Really?
And apparently was infected by holding the alien being in his lap from the contact of it.
Wow.
You know, that
reminds me, Richard. Yeah, you know, Richard, you're there in close to Hollywood, but that reminds me so much of the movie Taken. You remember, by Spielberg, and I think actually Spielberg, they interviewed Tom Horn's, I believe it was his sister that had been abducted, and, you know, for portions of that movie. But that was an awesome movie when that came out. I mean, it reminded me so much of a lot of truth in there, maybe.
Well, what's interesting is I've been invited to these sessions. It's funny you say Hollywood, but I know you've heard of Stephen Bassett. He is the lobbyist for the Washington, D.C. Citizens Hearings for Disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And in May, they had former congresspeople listening to military experts, doctors, officers, and people in the government about their actual experiences and lab results on the whole UFO phenomenon. And Stephen has put together a monthly meeting that I've been going to, and it's only people who are in media are invited. So it's like people in Hollywood that are working on projects about UFOs, so that's why I've been asked to come. And one of the times that I was there, I met Dean Haglund, who played the long blonde guy in X-Files.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the hacker that was part of the Lone Gunman? Well, Dean Haglund was at one of these meetings, and I got to meet him. And it's a very interesting thing. And the reason why I want to go is I want to hear what these guys think. I want to know what Hollywood's thinking about this whole phenomenon, because it gives me insight and perspective that I wouldn't have otherwise. Because a lot of this, Hollywood's criticized about everything, and a lot of times it's justified, but in other times I think it's ignorant criticism from people who haven't actually associated with the producers involved in these projects to get their side of it. I want to hear their side of it.
That's interesting indeed. The movie Taken, though, what I was referring to was the alien, so-called the Greys, the alien Greys.
Right.
And that did remind me a little bit of what that image you showed me out of Brazil appeared to be. It appeared to be a burnt gray to me a little bit.
Right. Well, I think it was some other species. It had the big eyes, but the eyes were red,
uh-huh.
not black. And grays were usually gray, and these entities were brown, according to all of the eyewitness accounts. I don't know what they were, Larry, but they did. They were real, and people took pictures of them. And it went on the news there. And then a big C-47 came in and took all the evidence away, as usually what happens. It's really frustrating.
Exactly.
But you mentioned abductions, and abductions are real. I mean, that's going on constantly. It has been for the past 30 years at least. It's a real phenomenon. It's not a silly thing. It's not like some kind of hoax. It's actually going on. And what I thought was really interesting is one of the guys that I just heard speak recently, only a few days ago, was Captain Robert Salas. And perhaps you've heard of him. He was the guy who was in charge. Yeah, he was in charge of a ballistic missile base in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of other soldiers. And I like Robert very much. He's a brilliant guy, a no-nonsense, highly intelligent, special. His job was very specialized for knowing about nuclear missiles. And in 1967, he got a phone call from one of the soldiers, said, "Sir, there is a UFO that's glowing red, a fuzzy red color, that has landed, or I guess it was hovering over the center of the missile silo area. And they couldn't do anything about it. I mean, one of the other teams, it also happened, he was working at the time for an area called Oscar Flight, I'm sorry. I'm trying to remember too much stuff here at once. But there was another set of missiles at another base called Echo Flight that had the same thing happen there. And apparently the guys at Echo Flight fired at the UFO over 100 rounds and nothing happened.
Hmm.
And so one of the soldiers climbed down into the silo while the missiles were being deactivated, powered down, and tried to turn it back on again. And he said it was like standing in a field of static electricity.
Wow.
And it was just, there was so much energy being directed down into the missile silo that he couldn't get any of the equipment to turn back on again, meaning that they knew exactly how to turn their stuff on, off, or do anything they wanted to with it. But here's something that's very interesting. I think we're getting clues, which I get really excited about. One thing that Captain Salas mentioned was that there are these lids that you always see on this historical footage of these ballistic missile silos, and it's a gigantic concrete top that's basically on a steel track, and it slides to one side really fast. I'm sure you've seen pictures of that, haven't you, Larry? These things opening up before they launch.
Right.
And so all of those lids were just taken off the silos and laid on the ground nearby.
Oh, my. Mm.
And each one of those weighs 20 tons.
Huh.
So that shows us that they have the ability to levitate extremely heavy objects, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when we were in Peru, we were wondering how all these stones got positioned.
That makes good sense. Absolutely it does.
You know,
we're
looking
yeah,
at the same technology.
Yeah.
It's a clue. So
that
Captain Solis also,
go ahead.
He just finished releasing a book where he talks about his own abduction, which is really brave for him to write about, and a man in his position. He was abducted from his home in Manhattan Beach in 1985, and is just now writing about it for all these years. And he gave a very detailed report of his experience.
Wow. That'll be extremely interesting. You know, I know a lot of people, you know, when we talk abduction, it's really widespread. I mean, a lot of people don't realize it, but it is a widespread thing.
Well, it is. Stephen Bassett believes that there's estimates that up to 2% and possibly more of the population of the United States has been abducted.
This has been going on for a number of years, hasn't it, Richard?
Long time.
It was you mentioned that I think at the first when it first began, you said you feel like that their program now is complete as far as the hybrids. Where do you see this going from this point on?
Well, we interviewed Dr. David Jacobs and also Dr. Lear on the abduction phenomena, and Dr. Jacobs has been studying it for almost 40 years. I mean, he's probably put together a volume of work that's larger than anyone else on the topic, and we actually went to his home and interviewed him, and I walked through the room with his files of abductees and saw all these little miniature files. It was just like an X-Files episode. It was just like, it was amazing to be there because this is a brilliant guy. This isn't a kook. This isn't someone who's unlearned. He was professor at Temple University in Philadelphia there. He's a really sharp guy, and as soon as you hear him talk, you realize the depth of his understanding of the phenomenon. And he told us that when he got into this originally because he was so excited at the idea that we were actually being visited by other civilizations and thought it might be positive. And now he feels it's another set of entities coming to take advantage of the people on the earth. And he says his view of the future is filled with despair. He used the word despair. He said, I don't see our great-grandchildren living in the same world we've lived in.
Yeah.
And he talked about people inviting hybrids into their homes. And we said, well, how do you know they're hybrids and what do they do? And he said, well, and he, like, pointed to his tabletop. He said, like, want to pick up a little box off of the table and look at it and go, what is this?
Uh-huh.
That, and you'd say, that's a garage door opener.
Huh.
I mean, they're just not acquainted with normal, everyday life thing or the way you would speak. So they're having to learn all of that. And there,
wow.
We have other examples of it. I mean, Dr. Lear talked about this one guy that he met when he was in Colorado Springs speaking once, and, you know, Dr. Mir said, well, you must enjoy skiing. You must come here for the skiing. And the guy had said he had driven 1,500 miles to hear Dr. Weir. And the guy said, what's skiing? Never heard that before. So those are telltale, you know, signs that this person has led a very sheltered life and possibly hasn't lived here very long yet.
Are you familiar, Richard, with Paola Harris, the Italian journalist?
Yes, I know Paola.
Okay, well, I used to talk to Paola some. She moved to America, I think, for some time, but she met and did a DVD documentary of a meeting with a Charlie Hall, I think she called him, a retired Air Force weatherman, and I don't know if you're familiar with him. Okay. It's
I'm
very
not with him, but I know that met with Balducci, who is the Vatican's demonologist.
Right, right.
And Balducci is the guy who believes that he actually also met with Jaime Maussan, who's working with us on Watchers 7, and Jaime's a great guy. Can't say enough good things about Jaime. But Jaime, as far as I can tell, Jaime is a devout Catholic and actually knows Balducci and has been to his home.
Oh.
And he told us, and this is in Watcher 7, it's kind of a sneak preview here, that Balducci, which is Monsignor Balducci, which is a title that only the Pope can give you, Balducci said, be watching that Jesus, the image of Jesus is going to change from an earthly Jesus to a universal Jesus. And that happened in 2008.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And Balducci believes they're talking about welcoming our extraterrestrial brothers. And other people in the Vatican are saying they want to be the first to baptize one of them, no matter how many tentacles they have.
My.
So they're really, the Vatican's really sucked into this and look at it as, they believe that ETs are from other planets or other star systems. They don't think of them as being part of, that they're interdimensional or they're already from Earth. They don't
uh-huh.
see things that way.
Well, that's one of the things that was so interesting. You know, I watched the DVD interview with Paola interviewing Charles Hall, and apparently he was in a black project through the U.S. Air Force where he was introduced or encountered. I think it was actually created encounters where they would thrust him into the presence of some of these different alien shapes. One of them he calls the Tall Whites, which does sound definitely
right.
And look like hybrids. I mean, they look like a hybrid being. And, you know, apparently the Air Force and the so-called alien groups watched his reactions and actions with this alien. These alien folks, I'll just put it that way, and tried to build relationships on that, and this went on for years. I mean, what you're saying is really been in the background and as dark projects for years, but most people's never heard of such a thing.
Well, as part of the Citizens Disclosure Conference that I was telling you about, there was a gentleman that spoke for his a lot of time, which I think they gave everyone 20 minutes or something like that. But this was Paul Hellyer, who was the former defense minister of Canada. And his comment, which I thought was really powerful, was that UFOs are as real as the airplanes that fly overhead.
Hmm.
And he said that he was familiar with the Tall Whites and learned that the U.S. government was working with them in Nevada. There was some kind of an operation going on there, and that the Tall Whites were doing something with us in Nevada. What they were doing, I don't know. And so apparently, from everything I've heard, there's various species of aliens. And I know we've talked about that in the past, you and me, Larry.
Sure, sure. Charles Hall indicated that that's where the encounters that the Air Force had him scheduled with actually occurred, was quite a few miles from Las Vegas out in the desert by the mountains, and it was in very secluded areas that had high priority security around them, and he would encounter these so-called beings or hybrids or whatever. And, you know, on a daily basis, I mean, this was, you know, he's written about 5 books. Matter of fact, his last one, the originals was Tall Whites, but he's finally coming out now. I think he just got a book out the last 6 months or so talking about his encounters with the Greys. I mean, it wasn't just one hybrid creature. I mean, we're talking different types of hybrid beings, and, the subject gets really deep, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, it makes sense to me. There's something going on in Nevada because there's a man, but I won't mention his name because he wants to keep it out of the public.
Okay.
But there was a guy that when we first moved into the house, we rented a house here in Porto Ranch, California. And one of the things that we had to do, we sent a man over just to make sure all the smoke alarms were up and functional. And so I let this guy in, real personable guy, and he's 6'9".
Wow.
And he could just reach up and pull the smoke alarms down, check the battery, put them back up. And he came into my studio area and said, oh, what is it that you do? He saw my editing equipment, the monitor on the wall, and everything. He said, oh, I'm working on this series called Watchers. So I'm directing it. And he said, what's that? And I said, you know, I explained to him what we do. It's on the paranormal, the supernatural, the Shroud of Turin, the Torah codes, it's UFOs. And he goes, oh, UFOs. Oh, I really love learning about that. So I gave him our first DVD on UFOs. And then he said, just out of the blue, he said, I have an implant. And I said, you do? And he said, I was a little surprised, but I didn't act surprised, because I hear this all the time, Larry, from people. You know,
wow.
They don't believe everybody that tells me they have an implant actually has one. So I
right.
started asking him questions. You know, I said, did you see light, or did you, you know, or did you, were you visited, or did you, do you remember being on a craft or anything? All the normal questions. I could be missing time. And he answered some of them very factually. I said, well, okay, if you really think you have one, get an X-ray of it and send it to me, and I will go to my friend Dr. Lear.
Uh-huh.
And I really didn't expect this guy to do it because very few people do what they say they're going to do. I'm sure you know that. I mean, just people just don't.
That's true. Yeah.
But about a month later, in my email, I got a JPEG of an X-ray of this guy's leg. And I looked at it close and thought, well, looks like there's something in there. I don't know if it's an implant, but it's bright white, which usually means it's a metallic object. So immediately I sent it to Dr. Lear, and I said, what do you think of this? He said, I want to see this guy right away.
My.
I said, okay. So we brought him over there, and this is when I asked him, I said, would you mind if we document this? Because I think this is fascinating, and put it in Watchers. And he agreed, and I said, we'll pay for all of your x-rays and medical stuff. And he said, okay, fine. So we took him over there, and we did 4 more x-rays. It appeared in all 4 x-rays, some better than others. Sometimes it's very hard if you're shooting an object in an x-ray that's metal, and the bone is right behind it, and the angle that you're shooting, you can hardly see it because the bone looks white and the object looks white, and it's only a slight, you know, slight difference. So you have to turn the leg to the one side so that it's out in the middle of the fleshy tissue there when you shoot the x-ray so you can see where it is. So we did that, and when we got those results, Dr. Lear said, well, now, for us to really isolate exactly where this is, how thick the object is, and how far away from the bone it is, we really need to do a CAT scan. So we took him over there and we paid for a CAT scan. And it appeared, you know, a CAT scan basically gives you slices of the body, like bologna slices. And one view of the CAT scan slices the leg like right straight through, and the other slices the leg from the other direction, so horizontally and vertically. And it showed up in multiple CAT scan versions. So we ended up knowing that this device or whatever it is, this object, is very close to the phone. It's about 6 millimeters in length and appeared to be metallic. So after you do those things, then we did tests. And those tests are more or less scientific tests using laboratory equipment. And some of the tests are really simple. Like you won't believe the one test that Dr. Liu did was using a stud finder. Like what you find like a because
makes
a
stud
finder, that's how we could tell if it's metal or not or something else.
Yeah.
So he was running the stud finder up and down this man's leg, and it would go off, start beeping, and showed us right where it was. We said, it's metallic. We know that for sure now, or the stud finder wouldn't have gone off.
Mm-hmm.
So then possibly one of the more interesting tests was the Gauss meter test, where we checked to see if there's any magnetic flux coming out of the implant, and that's very common in this field.
Mm.
For implants to be sending out a magnetic signature. On the Gauss meter, when you put the Gauss meter over his leg where the implant was, the Gauss meter was going crazy and registered 7 milligauss. So then Dr. Lear followed up.
Let me ask you, Richard, before we get past that, is that a low frequency or a high frequency you're talking about?
It's magnetic field. Essentially. So
A magnetic
a frequency. Yeah, it's just
okay.
How much magnetism is it putting out. So as a test, he stuck the meter over on my camera as I was filming him, and I have a Canon Model 60D, and it has a lithium-ion battery in it and a lot of electronics and, uh-huh. And all that stuff. He holds the Gauss meter up to my camera, and it read 9 milligauss. So here's an object with no battery attached, nothing generating any power in it, 6 millimeters in length and about the diameter of a pencil lead, and this object's putting out 7 milligauss.
Wow.
Just really, it was quite stunning to see that. So I asked Dr. Lear, I said, well, move it away from the object. Let's see if the needle goes down. Sure enough, it did. So it wasn't a fluke.
Hmm.
And the magnetic thing is very interesting because we've heard that during the abduction, an abduction scenario, there's often a magnetic signature left in the home or in the yard or in the bed.
Oh,
and that's measurable. You can go back in and measure it the next day, and it'll still be there. And things that are normally not magnetized become magnetic. Like trees, mattress material from mica countertops, all those things become temporarily magnetized. Isn't that odd?
That is strange. Absolutely. So if someone's abducted from a bed, you could actually detect possibly a magnetic influence on the physical bed itself, a residue of magnetism.
Well, that's right. And in this one particular instance, and we document some of this in Watcher 7, that's why I can't wait to get this out because I want people to see this. I really want people to know that this stuff is real and that people aren't just making this up to sell product. It's really happening, and we've proven it from a scientific standpoint. And we've gone into sealed labs and used electron microscope. We've done EDX analysis of our samples. EDX is basically a way to use X-ray spectroscopy on a sample to get a spectrum analysis of its elemental percentage. Like, does it have aluminum in it? Does it have oxygen in it? Is there carbon in it? You know, is there titanium in the sample? I mean, it will tell you very accurately down to trace elements what you're looking at. So there cannot be any BS going on here. It's going to tell you exactly what's in that. And people can't argue with a piece of laboratory equipment that's as big and as expensive as the stuff we use for Watcher 7.
Wow.
But going back to the magnetic Gauss meter readings, there was another guy who was abducted, and he was in bed with his wife, and she was asleep when it happened. He was taken out, and she was left in the bed. And when they came in to do Gauss meter readings, his side of the bed was magnetized, and her side of the bed was not.
Wow, now that is very interesting. Absolutely.
And here's the thing that I compare that to. When Roger said to me, and he was taken and she was left, all of a sudden, oh, my goodness. I said, you realize what you're saying is weirdly scriptural. And he said, how do you mean? I said, well, Yeshua tells us in Matthew 24 that in the end of days, after the sign of his coming, that there'd be people doing various things, and one would be taken and the other left. And that's what we're seeing with abductions. And if abductions are being done by basically fallen angels, say that's what it is. I know how crazy that sounds to a lot of people, but we don't know what an angel looks like. No one's ever seen one, right? All we know
I don't know anybody that's seen one. Yeah, my own assumption is they can really appear in any form pretty much they feel like, I think. I think they have that ability.
I believe that some of them, if not all of them, I would agree with that. They have shape-shifting abilities to appear in different ways to people. So what do we know about abduction? We know that these people are floated through walls and windows. It's almost like what Dr. Jacobs calls future physics, the ability to rearrange the molecular structure of a wall or a surface so that you can pass right through it. And we read about these things happening in Scripture. This is not new.
Yeah, yeah.
And the good guys and the bad guys can do the same thing. They have similar, if not identical, powers. So, as Yeshua says in Matthew 24, that the angels would come from the four winds and take out the elect from the earth at that time. Remember that passage. And one would be taken and the other left. The person that's left and not taken in the abduction scenario is paralyzed, so they can't move. I haven't just heard this once, but that's just what happens. It's just over and over this happens. Everybody says that.
Yeah. Wow.
And so when the good angels come, I would expect the same thing to happen, the same kind of scenario. This may be how people are able to leave and no one realizes they're gone.
That's really interesting. It reminds me of, Enoch leaving planet Earth, and it reminds me of Elijah leaving planet Earth or our dimension. I mean, boy, that opens up some, that would open up discussion, wouldn't it? Would it not?
Yes. Well, I think a lot of the stuff in Scripture is based on physical laws of other dimensions that we don't understand. It's not all iconic and fairy tales about what's happened. Uh-huh. I believe that these people that wrote these passages actually saw these things happen and try to describe it as best they could in the language of the day.
I think you're right.
But what I like to do, because there's a lot of people who don't believe that the scriptures are anything more than just fiction, and what I like to do is to try to prove everything we can scientifically, if we are able to, so that it becomes like it lifts it out of just the fairy tale dumb that people think. And it's like, well, explain this then. If you put it under a microscope, and here's what we found, and here's the chemical compounds involved, explain how that works.
Right. Hey, Richard, we came to the end of the first hour. Do you want to go another hour, or would you like a break, or you need some water?
It's up to you. Do you have to take a break for
Well, we don't have to.
Messages.
Are you there, Dorothy? Dorothy?
Yes, take a minute to open the mic.
Yeah.
We don't have to take a break, but we can if you like. I can play some music.
Okay, have we got any questions coming in from anybody at all? Or?
Not so far. I was wondering, how do you know if you have an implant? I mean...
That's
no, Richard, go ahead.
Well, some people don't realize they've had an implant. There's one guy that I met that Dr. Weir took an implant out of his arm. He didn't realize. He had a UFO sighting. He was driving his truck, and his wife was with him. He saw this bright light coming from behind and passed them and sat down in a field off to the left. Next thing you know, he's driving home. That's all he remembers. When he gets home, the babysitter goes, "Where have you guys been? You're like 2 hours late." And he had missing time. Well, that's all he knew, and he didn't know that he was implanted or anything like that. Well, he was in construction at the time and accidentally hit his thumb with a hammer really bad and went to the doctor with it. So the doctor x-rayed his arm and his hand, and he said, "What's this? You know you have a piece of metal in your wrist." And he said, "I do not." He said, "Well, yes, you do. It's right here on the x-ray." So then he started putting two and two together. This was, I guess, like 20 years later, after all this happened to him, and heard about Dr. Lear and contacted him. And Dr. Lear did surgery, which actually is this gentleman that in our very first watchers, we show the surgery of them removing the implant. And he was implanted. But he didn't realize it until later. Other people, like the man who told me he has an implant, experienced tremendous pain from it. He was riding his motorcycle home one day and told me, he said, the pain in his leg got so great he had to pull over and stop and almost lay down on the ground until it subsided. So he's kind of looking forward to getting it out. But then, you know, there's Whitley Strieber, who's quite famous, and his abduction was featured in the film called Communion in the late 80s by Christopher Walken. Remember that film?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know of him real well.
Well, Whitley Strieber said, and I heard him in person once, where he said they found this implant in his ear, and he said when they were x-raying it, it would move on its own. It was crawling around inside his ear, and he said when it would move, it was tremendously painful.
Wow.
And he said there was a time where he thought he was going to have to just take, you know, the outer part of his ear off to get rid of it, but he just ended up resolving just to leave it alone. So he still has it in the rim of his ear even to this day.
Hmm.
So these things are x-rayable.
Yeah, let me ask you something, Richard. Just in your opinion, you know, or maybe you've heard from Roger Lear a little more data, but do you feel like that these implants are like a tag? In other words, you know, you could tag an animal with an implant to locate it or follow it or have data on it. I know there's probably much greater technology than that I'm just talking about, but is it something similar a little bit, maybe?
Well, we used to think that they might be tracking devices or so that they could come back to the same person and abduct them again, but I don't think that's necessary. They're so more advanced. They could track us on our DNA without an implant.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of theories about what these implants are doing, depending on where they're positioned. But one thing we've noticed is that quite often the implants are located close to a bone. And we think that they're using the skeletal structure of people as an antenna. And since they're generating such high frequencies, and it's always in the gigahertz or hundreds of gigahertz, that this isn't like, this is beyond radio transmission and
It gets into things like scalar waves and scalar technology and zero-point energy and stuff like that, that these implants could be actually self-generating up to, you know, several watts of power. And we don't know what they're doing, if they're injecting signals into the host's nervous system. And we think sometimes that might be the case because they could be making people feel nervous or uncomfortable or, you know, all of those kind of things. And there may be is probably a lot deeper reason for it than what we understand. But it's quite nefarious. It's very, I don't believe it's a good thing. I don't, Larry.
Yeah. Dorothy, you have another question?
Miss Elaine wants to know if you've got her picture of the twins that she sent you yesterday by email.
The twins?
The transparent twin. I think she sent it to Larry. And I was wondering, Richard, is there any... Can you... excuse me. Can you find any criteria that they're using to choose their... abduction victims? Is there any pattern at all?
That's a good question. I really don't know. It seems very random almost, but once they choose someone, and this often starts when a person is quite young in their childhood and continues throughout their entire life. I know several people that have been abducted, and I know one particular guy who is referred to as a frequent flyer. He's abducted every couple of weeks.
My.
Yeah.
One of the cases,
there was alien beings that came in his bedroom during this process and reached their hand through his windowsill and touched the sheetrock underneath the window. And they were, the next day when he and Dr. Lear came in and were doing magnetic readings, this was one of the weirdest accounts I ever heard. His tree in the yard was magnetized.
Wow.
Apparently the craft landed in their backyard somewhere, and the earth in the backyard would spontaneously catch on fire afterwards. Just the dirt in the ground would catch on fire. And whatever alien came into his bedroom left fingerprints on the wall under his window that they identified by picking up a magnetic signature. So they shut off all the lights. And the way you can see these fingerprints is in ultraviolet light. They shut off all the lights and put an ultraviolet light on, and there were these little four-fingered fingerprints with enlarged pads for the fingertips go. So what they did was they actually took a saw and cut that piece of the wall out of the house. And in Watcher 7, we brought that piece of wall into the lab and tested it. And it was really an amazing thing. I've got the best shot of the alien fingerprints anyone's taken so far.
Well, let me ask you something. You know, I was in law enforcement for like 35 years, Richard, and I'm very familiar with fingerprints, human fingerprints mostly. But, generally human fingerprints, it leaves a residue, of the fingerprint, an oily residue generally. Was
right.
There a residue with, you know, you sent me a copy. I saw the image of the alien fingerprints. Was there some type of residue on that window, or did y'all test that part of it?
Yes, we did. We actually took a little knife and lifted a piece of the painted drywall and put it in the electron microscope. And, of course, it just looks like a piece of drywall. You're not going to see a fingerprint under the electron microscope. But what we wanted to do, by using an electron microscope, you can put the crosshairs on the computer over an area that you want to examine for chemical compounds. And our lab tech's name was Richard Matson, and he's not involved with us, or, you know, he's not on the UFO bandwagon or anything like that. But we said, Richard, in your opinion, is this, are there any chemical compounds here that would make you think that this was the, any human fingerprint residue here? And it, otherwise, do you think it's human? And he said, no, I don't.
Hmm.
He said, there's no evidence. He said, if it was human fingerprints, we would see chlorine or sulfur, you know, basic things that come out of sweat or oils from the skin. And none of those things, which they're used to looking at in the lab, were present.
Hmm.
Did you check for touch DNA, the stuff we leave behind when we touch things?
We need an actual piece of tissue to do that. The closest we've ever come is at the end of Watcher 6. I don't know if you guys saw that or not, but when we were in Paracas, there was a skull that was mummified of woman. Yeah, it was. She had auburn hair, slightly reddish hair, which is very unusual for South America. People don't have auburn hair anymore. And this mummy was approximately 2,800 years old. We had a couple hairs from that mummy that we were allowed to take home and do tests on. And we took them in the lab, and Stephen Colburn did something called a Raman spectroscopy test on those hairs. And he took four hair samples. One was our mummy hair. One was one of his own hairs. Another hair was one of a woman who had dyed her hair, so we could see if the red color was real or if it was, you know, artificially made that color in those days, because no one really knows. We think it was actually that color from birth. And then we had one hair, and this is the one that most people have trouble believing, but I believe it's true, that Dr. Lear got for us, which was came from a known alien hybrid woman.
Oh.
And the hybrid hair and the mummy hair almost perfectly tracked in the Raman spectroscopy test, and it, all of the nodes were in the, at the same frequency points. And the only difference between the two hair samples was that the hybrid hair had slightly greater amplitude on the chart than the 2,800-year-old mummy hair. And we thought that was just really astonishing.
That's incredible.
So to us, that meant that these elongated skull peoples were hybrids. And that's basically what the scriptures tell us.
Uh-huh.
Ancient texts talk about the giants. And, you know, they use very poetic language. They say that the sons of God came and mated with the daughters of men. But essentially what that is a species that's not human having sex with a human woman and producing a hybrid offspring. And that's essentially what we're discovering with these skulls from Peru.
That's amazing. I mean, just seeing those skulls, and you know, in the Watcher 6 was just incredible. I mean, that is some really good filmography of that. You know, it's all there. I mean, it's right there in our face, but yet it seems like still it's hidden, and people would really rather try to think it's fiction. I mean, you could pass it off in a fiction book, a science fiction novel, but it's really hard to pass off in reality.
Well, yeah, there has to be an explanation of who these people were. And there is currently a global cover-up going on all over the world of trying to bury this information, keep it out of the public's hands. It's very pervasive, and it's a real cover-up. I'm not just talking conspiracy theories here. This is what we've been up against constantly every time we go somewhere. If we want to see something, we might have to go in a back room and pay the museum for the rights to look at it. Or pay the museum just to take a picture of it. We've had to do that. And why is that? You know, why do they want to keep this stuff out of the public consciousness? And basically, it's a real thing. It's not this isn't make-believe. We're not making these stories up. All this stuff is highly documented, but we're trying to do what other people aren't doing, and that's basically go around and dig this information up wherever we can.
Well, that's true, and what you say is really true. On any of this subject matter that, you know, we brought up and talked about tonight, all of this stuff really and truly is really backroom stuff. I mean, you know, even ironically, you know, like the guys, you know, y'all go around and, you know, interview, well, kind of like the archaeologist or the guy at Rockwall, Texas on the wall down there. You know, this is a guy that hardly anybody knows much of, yet he's got incredible stuff, evidence, physical evidence, right there in his house. You know, y'all dug it out and drug it out and photographed it. And I think Ted did it and all this other. And you know, this is how it goes, and people don't realize, you know, people all over the world have evidence. Matter of fact, I do like your signature on your new watchers called Physical Evidence. I like that.
Well, thanks. I felt like we had to get people's attention. Like, okay, this isn't just fuzzy, you know, lights in the sky. This is actual pieces of stuff that we're taking into the lab and analyzing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's stuff that's not going to be in Watcher 7. I mean, I was interested in seeing if, remember when back in Watchers 4, we interviewed this guy named John Lindsay, who was an expert on Rockwall in Texas. Maybe you remember that, Larry.
Yes, I do, and real well. And matter of fact, I'm familiar with it. Matter of fact, didn't y'all have some storms when you flew in there?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, there was a tornado came through 45 minutes after we touched down. But he had this powder in a little vial that he said was made up of little round balls and tetrahedrals. And I don't know where he saw this before, but I said, L.A., you know, who's the host of our show and my partner and confidant and Watchers, who I couldn't do the show without him because he's just L.A. is super knowledgeable in all these areas, and we have a lot of fun together doing these shows. And so he got some samples of that dust from Rockwall for us to test. So I gave it to Steve Colburn, and I said, this is supposed to be little round balls and tetrahedrals from Rockwall, Texas. So Steve and Colburn pulled, basically, when you put a sample in an electron microscope, it's a process. You first look at the sample with an optical microscope to get the piece of it that you want, you know, so you can basically zero in on a piece of it, because otherwise, what you're doing here is looking like at a business card-sized object in the middle of a football field. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
That's what you're doing. So you have to kind of get close before you start putting it in the electron microscope. So it goes on a little piece of carbon tape, black tape that's conductive. That goes on a post that mounts inside the electron microscope. So you put your sample in all of that, and you clamp it down, and you close a metal door, and then you wait till the air is evacuated from the chamber. It's pumped down, and you have a hard vacuum. And then you can start looking at it, because there can't be any air inside the sample chamber while you're looking at it. And we looked at this dust from Rockwall, and it had all of the normal things. When we EDX'd it, it was mostly silicone and other very well-known chemicals, elements that you would find in sand.
Uh-huh.
But there was no evidence of little round balls and tetrahedrals. So I said, well, that theory is dispelled, or at least this sample we have is just sand. So we're just trying to go for the truth here. So one thing I did when I was at the Temple of the Sun in Ollanta Tambo, Peru, remember that wall that we talked about that had kind of a polished surface? And this was like at the Temple of the Sun, way up on top, high, and
right.
Yeah, area. And in fact, the cover of Watcher 6 is another wall that was on that same mountain. So with my pocket knife, I loosened a tiny piece of stone from the surface of the rock that had kind of a polished surface to it. It was flaking off towards the bottom, and I put it in a Ziploc bag and took it home. And we looked at that under an electron microscope, and basically it just looked like normal rock material. There was nothing weird about it or anything like that. So we think that the rocks that are there in Peru are classified as being piezoelectric rocks. They're highly, they have veins of quartz running through them. They're highly piezoelectric, so they would respond to electrical impulses, or if you applied pressure to the stones, they would generate electricity. And somehow they were using these rocks to either communicate or to generate power, or we don't know what they were. It's a technology that we don't have anymore. It's like Tesla technology.
Yeah, wow. That is amazing, absolutely amazing.
So we looked at it under electron microscope and didn't find anything unusual. So we said, okay, well, that dispels that theory. So we're just going for the truth. We're not going for sensationalistic stuff.
Right.
But the one thing that I really wanted to see was at Jaime Massaw, I had heard, had this sphere in his possession. And, Larry, you've probably seen, I don't know if Dorothy's still on the line listening or able, or if we have anybody calling in or if you guys do that, but you've probably seen these UFO videos where they have that show a craft overhead with little round balls being spit out the front and the back.
Right.
And
right.
So the whole sky is full of these little round, bright, glowing objects, hundreds of them.
Uh-huh.
So one day in 1994, a metal object was making a hissing noise and fell out of the sky at high velocity and crashed into a farmer's field and exploded, and the shockwave killed the farmer's cow.
Mm.
And when he walked up to it, it was a hollow ball with an opening that was blown out of each side, and it was glowing red hot. So we had to wait for it to cool off where he could pick it up. And once it was cool, he took it to Jaime Massaw, because Jaime Massaw has had a long-running show on Mexico City television called 60 Minutes that basically is all about the UFO phenomena. So Jaime, I think he bought this sphere from this guy, and you could tell it melted coming through the atmosphere of where the surface of it had drizzled and run down the inside. And it was formed in halves, and it was thick and heavy. It was at least 3/8 of an inch thick, and it was made mostly out of titanium.
Wow.
So a few years ago, Stephen Colburn got a little sample of the outside of it and ran it into the lab and basically said he found carbon nanotubes inside of it.
Really?
Now, so we just recently learned that the first computer built with carbon nanotubes was actually functioning. That was on the news yesterday. So there's this theory that these spheres, that the circuitry for them, they're hollow. There's nothing, there's no moving parts or anything like that. Stephen's theory is that the skin of the sphere is full of carbon nanotubes, and that's the circuit that powers it.
Hmm.
And the carbon nanotubes are, you know, the size of atoms. So you could put anything in there, and if they crashed on the ground, people just go, oh, it's a hollow metal ball. It's no big deal. When actually he thought maybe this was a UFO thing. So when I saw Jaime in Los Angeles a few months ago, I said, I hear you have this sphere, and I'm showing him the cast skull that we brought back from Peru. That Joe Taylor had made for us, and he was real interested in holding that and looking at it. And I said, I'd really like to see this sphere that you have. And he goes, come to my home in Mexico City, I give you anything you want. He was just very receptive, and just, you know, I couldn't believe it. He was just wonderful. So I told LA, I said, we got to go see Jaime, we got to spend some time with him. So we went there, and one of his assistants went to his house and brought this large anvil case into the studio and opened it and brought the sphere into the room. And we're filming all of this. It's all, you know, I filmed the whole thing. I've held the sphere. I've looked at it. I've flipped it over. And I asked him, I said, can I take a new sample of it that Steve can look at in the lab? And he said, be my guest. He said, good luck in trying to cut it because we can't even burn
wow.
through it. They tried to use a torch on it with 3,000 degrees and it wouldn't melt. So I used a Dremel tool with a diamond disc and managed to cut a little wedge of metal out of it. And then Steve asked me if I would cut a piece of the seam that went around the middle of it from the inside of the sphere. So we'd have a sample from the inside, unburned sample. So that was hard to do. I had to put the tool inside of the sphere and grind on it a long time to get a sample. So we ended up with these two little pieces of it that we looked at under the electron microscope, and the piece on the outside just looked like a piece of titanium. It didn't look all that unusual, but the piece on the inside had all sorts of weird glass fibers in it, and I mean, it was very, very odd looking.
Wow.
So I'm not saying this is alien technology. I'm saying I don't know what it is, but the stuff we found was very, very strange, very unusual, and I think people might find it interesting just to look at it.
Yeah, definitely different.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Dorothy, you got any more questions? Or anyone got any questions? We're available, you know, or really Richard is for the, you know, any questions that people need.
No more questions at this point. I don't see anyone posting any questions. I'd like to... Someone just responded in the chat room. No question, but he said no question. You said earlier that if I heard this correctly, the breeding program seems to be over.
That's what Dr. David Jacobs believes. We left him in a very depressed state when we left his house. And it was very sobering to hear his final words. You'll hear it in Watcher 7, his opinion
wow.
of what's gone on. He believes that they're done. That I have people that tell me that taken up on ships and that they see humanoid babies growing up there and whole families coming together. I mean, this is what people are telling me. And these aren't nutcase people that are sitting at home eating a can of pork and beans. These are like writers and intellectual people and scientists, and that's the people that tell me these things. So it's troubling to say the least, but I do believe that there's definitely something going on. Because of all the sightings we're seeing worldwide, there's stuff in the skies that defies description, and it's happening at a greater pace than it's ever happened before.
Well, my question is, if they're done with the breeding program, what comes after that? Does anyone have any clue?
Well, that's what I maybe didn't make that very clear before, and I apologize if I didn't. What we think is happening is that the hybrids that have been growing from these samples they've been taking from humans, I mean, the whole abduction experience has to do with taking ova and sperm from human beings, and this has been going on for decades. And we think that they're adding their own DNA to that and making a hybrid being. This may be what resulted in the black-eyed children. That was an early failed attempt. But now what we're getting is we believe that some of these hybrids are very human-looking and they're being introduced back into our society. and they'll look like us. You won't even know they're hybrids.
But for what purpose?
We believe it's to basically gradually over time make the human race into something else, something that they're in control of. And as weird as this, I know how weird this sounds to most people, especially if they haven't read some of the Torah in Genesis where this had happened before. I believe it's just a repeat of history. It's what's going on, but just in a more clandestine fashion than it happened the first time.
I think you're right.
So as the days of Nephilim.
Well, yeah, I mean, the hybrids would be called the Nephilim, but in the early days, apparently, human DNA was different than it is today. And something happened, and it could have been during the time. Dr. Lear, who doesn't claim to be any kind of a theologian, but looks at the Bible as an historical book, believes that it could have happened during the Tower of Babel incident, where people's language was changed, because also right after that, the length that someone would live was reduced. And people before that lived hundreds of years, and after that they lived like 120 years, and then eventually it kind of got down to 75 years, I believe. I forget what scripture that I've read where it says that, but so they're not getting the same results as they did in those days. They're not breeding with us does not end up in making a 30-foot giant.
Oh, and
so
that might be why our DNA has changed. That makes sense.
So what they're doing is genetic engineering, and they're very, I mean, this is a, I think people that aren't looking at the Bible as an historical text that has accurate information in it that may be a little hard to understand, and calling these people aliens are most likely part of the fallen angels that the Bible talks about, and you think of angels as being these cute little winged beings, and that's not what they are at all.
Yeah.
And we hear about all these different types of alien beings, various species, like there is an insectoid kind that has big eyes and looks like a praying mantis. There's another kind that's the grays that everybody wears T-shirts with aliens on. That's probably with the big eyes. That's probably what the grays look like. There's another kind that looks a lot like humans. And then there are the tall whites that we learned of from the former defense minister of Canada, who said he had heard about the tall whites from that were working in Nevada with our own government. And there's other species. I mean, if we lump the Brazil crash into all this, the Brazil ETs were little short guys, like maybe 4 feet tall, with heads that had kind of horns on them, really weird looking. They had like ridges, a protuberance, Roger would call it, on their heads, and a slit for a mouth and two little red eyes, and people were just terrified. They thought they were demons. Other people said that. So what are demons? We don't know. I mean, we know that they exist. We've read enough about them, and all through history, and even in other books besides the Bible, you hear about demons. All of these things that we read about usually stem from actual facts that are turned into fictitious stories and everything else, but the original seed is factual. So a lot of us believe that because of what we see on the way UFOs fly, they'll fly across the sky and then they'll disappear right in front of your eyes. Or they'll go at tremendous speeds and make zigzagging motions and all of that. that they're able to just basically pass between dimensions. And I'm going, okay, so they can do that. I mean, that doesn't really make me think that this isn't possible, because 150 years ago, if you'd shown someone a 747, they would think that was like incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Alien technology. How could that thing possibly fly, and how could you get across the Atlantic in 9 hours? I mean, that's crazy. No one would have believed it. But we do it all the time and think nothing of it. So these creatures, these entities, I mean, they look at our stuff and just chuckle how primitive it is compared to their technologies. And they can slide between dimensions. They can make ships that are anti-gravitational. They have technology to pass through walls or through solid objects, apparently. So it's like, okay, like David Jacobs refers to these things as future physics, and I agree with him. I think that's what it is. I think these things are all possible, and if we could just expand our thinking a little bit, we could probably start designing stuff like that ourselves.
Richard, let me ask you something a little bit different right here. You sent me a few questions earlier before the show, and one of them really tweaked my curiosity. And that, you know, I've known Stan Dale for a number of years, and I know you've met Stan.
Sure.
Stan talks about the physics between an object and the time difference within that object and outside of that object. In other words, one time is faster than the other one. It's being experienced in the same place. And
yes,
someone. Yeah, go ahead with your story. There was something that you had information about. The beings inside of a craft were moving faster than outside the craft.
Right. Well, this goes to a theory, and a lot of people think this is a hoax. I don't particularly believe it's a hoax. There was a guy back in the 80s that got onto a television show, and it might have been in Las Vegas, Nevada. This guy was Bob Lazar. You've probably heard him,
yeah.
Larry.
I have. Yeah, I heard him on Coast to Coast a number of times years ago.
Yeah, he won't do any more talks in public anymore because he got so beat up for doing it and revealing all that he knew. I'm surprised he's still alive, actually. But he said he worked at Groom Lake, which is close to Area 51. He mentioned he saw several alien craft, and they had nicknames for all of them, like the Top Hat, the Sport Model. I mean, all these different things. One they called the Jello Mold. Because, you know, they looked like all those things. And he, to me, he spoke like a scientist, very matter of fact. And when I heard him talk, I knew he was telling the truth. I believed that he was telling the truth. And one of the things he said was that these ships are basically levitated by gravity generators. There's like three levels on the ship, and the bottom level has these gravity generators that are like on a ball joint, and they swing in a direction. He said, unlike us, we shoot a flame out the back, and that makes the ship go forwards. He said, with a UFO, these like gravity generators swing in the direction you want to go in, and it just like creates a downhill slope that you can't see. But essentially, it just makes gravity work in your favor. But in order to do that, you're generating a tremendous amount of power, and all these ships have like some kind of generator that's super powerful inside these ships, and they're able to overcome gravity. But he said when you do that, you're also bending space-time, because gravity and space-time are connected. Now, I'm not saying I'm a physicist enough to understand how that works, but it seems to me that in every report where I've heard where people get close to a spaceship, they have missing time. I believe the missing time phenomena is because of this technology on board their ship that's anti-gravitational. And what happens is that you get close enough to that ship that you enter their space-time envelope that this thing is putting out because of all the energy it's sending out. Then all of a sudden, you're in their time zone and not ours anymore.
That
And if you're standing a long ways from a ship and you're watching it go through the sky and move real fast or go back and forth, then you're looking at a ship from your time's perspective as they're operating in their own independent space-time dimension.
Uh-huh.
And you're able to see that. And we're constantly seeing that. I believe this is true because you might remember Larry in Watchers 5, Gary Stearman's account, when he was in his Cessna and the alternator belt flew off, and so he had this spaceship come fly next to him. Well, he was like several hours late in landing, but to him, it was just normal time. And he didn't feel like any time unusual length went by. And that was borne out that the plane could only fly for 4 hours without needing to be refueled. And he was gone for 5 hours. I guess his whole flight might have been 5.5 hours or something like that. But when he landed, I believe he was landing in Lubbock, if I remember the story correctly, the plane had only used a third of a tank of fuel.
Yeah,
and
it's
been in the
incredible.
Air for 5 hours. That's not possible.
My.
So he was flying next to this craft that where he entered their time-space continuum. That's my theory. And I told him that, and he said it could be.
Well,
so,
I'll tell you what, to go by with that, Richard, I know of a guy, I met him, he works for a water department over in Arkansas, and I talked to him in person, and he had an encounter with a circular UFO craft that landed behind his house and went out, took a photograph of it. I have somewhere in my files a photograph. And he said what was interesting was when he went down there to take a photo of the craft, he had to walk down to it, and he said he began to, the closer he got to it, the more he began to experience something that he called, and this is his words, he says, "Time slowed down for me." And he got scared and ran back to his house because he said it's just the strangest thing he ever encountered. He got a picture of it in the woods, but he ran back to the house when he said time slowed down as he got closer.
Well, I believe that. I think that I'd love to see his picture, by the way, too.
I'll try to dig it up.
Your comment about the creatures on board the craft moving quickly, and I told this to Roger the other night, and he just went totally crazy. He goes, "Oh, that's really fantastic. That's brilliant." And I said, well, he got really excited and told it to Jordan Maxwell, who's a really smart guy, and we were all going out to dinner that evening. And because what had happened is Roger's sighting of that craft in Turkey is one of the best videos of a spaceship that's ever been recorded, and you can look in the front port of that craft and see two grays standing there. You can see that.
Wow.
And so they had
Larry?
The footage analyzed.
Yeah.
I have opened Are Daniel's they? Mic. I'm sorry for the intrusion. I have, yes,
oh, that's
I have
fine.
Opened
that's
his
fine. Mic. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, guys. How are you?
This is Daniel Holdings, Richard. Do you have a question, Daniel, or want to say something?
Hi there, Daniel.
Yeah, I do. Hey, Richard, how are you? I hate to interrupt. I've just been sitting here listening. It's a fascinating discussion. But I do have a question for you. Excuse me. Richard, I have long thought, you know how we've really basically gutted the space program? And it is. There's virtually no dollars going out of space. You know, they observe Mars through the rovers that are up there. They have this asteroid thing that they're going to try to do. But you know, aside from SOHO, there's not really any money being put, any real visible dollars, I should say, into the space program. I have long thought that, you know, we all know about TR-3Bs and that sort of thing. Have you and L.A. really talked about the fact that we could potentially have a black space program that is in cooperation with aliens, and much of the, or at least some of the things that we are seeing, especially now, there seems to be sightings all over the place, may not in fact be alien ships, but may in fact be human ships, maybe working with aliens. Have you guys ever really talked about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I totally believe that. What I mean, I have no way to prove it, and I can't vet it. It's all top secret, but I do believe that's the case. I do believe that's what's happening, and not everything that we see is quote-unquote alien. It could be black ops ships that are back-engineered, stuff that we don't know exists that Lockheed is doing or some other company. I totally believe that's possible, and I have people telling me that have worked in various sensitive areas that we have technology that's beyond Star Trek technology, if we only knew what it was, and that we've already been to all the planets and all of that. That's what people have told me. Now, I have no way to prove it, and I don't know whether that's true, but there has to be a reason that we haven't gone back to space, and or at least in a visible sense. But yet, the things that Jose Escamilla has discovered on the moon seem to indicate that there's a lot of activity up there. And I went through quite a few of the shots from JAXA, which is the Japanese space agency that took photos of the moon. And there's stuff up there that looks to me like buildings and roads and all sorts of stuff. I mean, maybe it's not, but to me it doesn't look natural. It doesn't look like it was naturally created, because it looks like it was manufactured. So yeah, I think that there's stuff going on, and I think this is one of the reasons for the UFO truth embargo, as Stephen Bassett likes to put it, because it could jeopardize this ongoing space exploration or super high-tech stuff that our country is involved in. Because when you look at it, most of the other countries in the world have willingly given up their information about UFOs. Brazil's been very open about it. Uruguay's been very open. And so has the UK, put out a lot of top secret papers from the past that people can look through. And the U.S. Has dribbled out some paltry information, but nothing of any substance.
Right. You know, I think it was the defense minister of Canada that came out and said that the U.S. was snowballing as far as UFO disclosure. What's your opinion about disclosure? I mean, I've heard several takes on the idea. I've heard people say that they're going to disclose themselves. I've heard people say there'll never be a disclosure. But what do you think? Because you're neck deep into this kind of thing, so I'm just curious.
Well, Stephen Bassett is working. He's dedicated his life to bringing on disclosure. And when we interviewed him, he said this, what he believed it would be like after disclosure. And when he gave us that explanation, I had a chill run down my spine, because I felt like what he had just described was written about in Revelation, the first part of the tribulation period. And I have a feeling, it's just a theory of mine, and I probably could be way off base, and I'm not advocating this as any kind of fact. But I kind of think that once disclosure happens, that's the beginning of the tribulation period. I think that'll be the beginning of it. And it'll be great. And Stephen Bassett said, well, more books. He says hundreds of books will be written about our alien visitors and all the stuff they know how to do. And this will go on for a couple years, most likely. And he said probably in the third year, it's when they'll start showing us how to do stuff and sharing their technology with us, and we'll learn how to do all these things. And I'm thinking, well, that's the first half of the tribulation period, and after that is when everything goes to hell in a handbasket.
That's really true.
You know? Yeah.
That is really true. You know,
and I'm thinking about that and going, wow. Well, they trick everybody because they can do all these amazing things, you know. And what's interesting, the whole Antichrist character, which Chuck Missler refers to that as an unfortunate label for this being that comes down and does all this stuff, but he's going to have powers and abilities. He can call fire down from heaven, and that's one of the things the scriptures say. So it's like, okay, well, I can't do that, but these beings probably could. And people will just go, oh, well, they can fix all our problems. They can neutralize all the radioactive elements and cesium from Fukushima. They can, you know, fix all this stuff for us. And we're watching them do that. They can neutralize our nuclear weapons, so there's no longer that threat. I mean, they'll go and do all these sweeping changes. They'll give us free energy. They'll do all these things that we want and didn't know how to do or were inhibited from doing it by greedy forces from the oil companies or government or greed or corruption, and all of that stuff will be, you won't be able to do that with these guys in charge because they'll know. So everyone will want to follow them. They'll be like tricked into that, and they'll go, look, if we give you this implant, and this is L.A.'s theory, and I tend to think this is a pretty interesting theory. It'll increase your lifespan by 300 years. You'll go back to the way things were back in old Bible days. You'll live to be really old, and you won't get sick anymore. And everybody go, yeah, I want that. And once you receive that, you're no longer human.
Oh, yeah. It'll change your DNA.
It changes you. So then what do you do? You're kind of hosed at that point.
Hey, you know, it just occurred to me. You said that they will know everything that is going on with you, so you can't really fool them. So are you saying, Richard, that they're actually going to work for the NSA?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. The reason I said they know everything is because in every case where people have said they've seen aliens or that they've communicated with aliens, they've never said, at least to my knowledge, except maybe in a couple of rare occasions, that they literally speak to them.
They communicate
telepathically.
Right. I'm only kidding. So, I don't think they work for the NSA.
Well, but the NSA is doing some evil stuff right now. They really are. You know, thank God for Snowden for pointing out what was really going on, or, you know, no one would know. But, I mean, we knew that there was stuff happening, but, you know, maybe they're monitoring this radio program while we're talking about them. But,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I mean, it's like there's weird things happening in the world, and the universe is a much stranger, more supernatural environment than anyone ever imagined it actually is. And the level of ridicule, if you suggest something like that, is intense. And I'm just used to it. I don't care anymore. It's like, okay, if you don't want to look at this in a scientific and factual way, you just want to make fun of it, you want to call it little green men, then you can show your own ignorance by doing that.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, Richard and Larry, I think that position about, gee, this is all make-believe, or, you know, you guys are nuts or whatever, I think that's going by the wayside faster than we can even shake a stick at it. Because if you look at the statistics, as an example, in the U.K., more people believe in UFOs than they believe in God. So,
right.
I think the idea that we are alone in the universe is, and you know, I don't know that anybody really believes that. I just think that's something we fell into because it was convenient for our own paradigm. But I think that is changing very, very quickly, and I think some of the things that we are about to see will cause it to change even faster. Because I don't know about you, Richard, but do you believe that we are about to see, I just have this feeling in my gut that we're about to see a ton of UFO activity that cannot be denied? I mean, do you have that inkling yourself?
Well, yeah. I mean, L.A. really believes that. He thinks there's going to be mile-wide craft, like, sitting over various places. But then other people say, well, that's already happened. And that's true, it has. I mean, in 1952, UFOs flew over the Capitol building. And
yeah,
things were getting really crazy back then. And we had a flood of science fiction movies that came out in the 50s. And some of those, if you really analyze what was being said, some of it was truthful. It wasn't just fiction. It was based on what was actually going on in those days. So, you know, I think that a disclosure, I mean, if they keep waiting to disclose in this country, we may not have the opportunity to disclose. They may disclose on their own. And just because they just decide to appear, it's like enough already. We've waited 60 years, so it's long enough.
Well, guys, thank you so much for entertaining my questions, Larry. I appreciate it, brother.
Richard, how are you, Daniel? Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yep. Bye-bye. Well, Richard, we've only got 5 more minutes. Do you have a subject you would like to just relate a little bit on, or do you want to talk some Torah code, new interior code information? Or?
I know, that is. I guess what I'd like to do is finish that scenario of what was seen in Roger's Turkish UFO with those alien beings. Apparently, there were three entities on that ship, and the video was later analyzed by a guy named Mario Santiago in Chile, and he took the actual tape that they shot in 2009 and stripped the fields from it and could see a third creature in the portal of the craft. And it was a praying mantis looking creature.
You know, Richard, let me interrupt you here just a second, okay? I think I told you this one time. If people think you're making that up, I've never shared this with anybody, hardly. I've met one of those. That's far as I'll go. But you are right. You are right, and seeing that, that's incredible. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's quite all right. That's an incredible statement you just made. And, yeah, I believe they're real. It's like, why not? I mean, we got all these other beings in the universe. Why not one like that? But essentially what was going on in that ship apparently was an abduction in progress. And you could see this praying mantis creature working really quickly, moving his arms around really fast in an unnaturally fast, speedy fashion. And I'm going, well, we're looking at the time-space continuum phenomena.
Uh-huh.
He's in his time-space continuum, and we're in ours, and it looks like he's going really fast when it's actually not. And Roger went crazy when I told him that. Yeah. So
that
it was
is
like,
interesting, yeah.
But any time these ships now are just hanging over one space for a long period of time, it makes me wonder if an abduction is in process and they're just parking there while they do it. Because that's apparently
what's going on. Yeah, ironically, Richard, that's exactly what Stan Deo says. He indicates that the time inside that ship or that container they're in is different time than what's outside that ship in our environment. So, I think you're right.
I agree, and I think it's a subset of their technology to be able to be anti-gravitational. I think that's what happens when you turn that kind of energy on. You're warping time, and to us it looks like they're moving really quickly, and they're actually not.
Wow.
That's just my own theory, and it could be full of, you know, it could be just stupid, but, I've seen this so many times, and you see the way these ships fly, and they fly really crazily, and they go in zigzagging directions, and that's just not possible.
Yeah. Well, we've only got less than a minute. Richard, man, I tell you, this has really been great. I mean, I feel like we've just sat across the table and drank coffee and chatted, and the subject matter has been, this is wonderful. I mean, really it is. And we'll have to do this again sometime. And I appreciate Dorothy hosting us on her program, you know, to do this. It's really been good. And I encourage people to get that Watcher 7. When did you say it's coming out again?
Looks like it'll be coming out in November, probably just before Thanksgiving, because once I finish, it has to be mastered and then replicated and printed and all of that. So by the time we package it and do all of that, it takes a couple more weeks.
Wow. That's got to be a getter. I mean, you got to get that one, folks. Well, Richard, thank you so much for this show. It's been a pleasure. I mean, seriously, a real pleasure just talking to you, and thank you so much.
Well, thanks so much to both of you for allowing me to do it, and I'll have to do it again sometime. And if you want to ever have this discussion over coffee, it'd be great to get together sometime somehow.
We'll do that. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dorothy.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Richard. I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I'm going to have to listen to this from the archives. My goodness, too much information to take in all at one sitting. So thank you, everybody, for coming. Follow us to figure out when the next show will be. I'll nag Larry. And good night, and Father bless.